The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of redlegnation.com. Hello there, podcasters. Welcome back to the Red Leg Nation Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Joining us again today is our old friend, Bill Lack. How are you today, Bill?
Doing all right. Just getting ready to watch some basketball.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that as well. Had some decent games yesterday and getting ready to see who else makes the Final Four today. By the time this podcast gets up on the internet, those games will be over, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. Got a pretty good show lined up for you here later in the day. Bill just talked to Matt Klinker, got an update from Sarasota. How'd that go, Will?
Went real well. We talked a little bit about what spring training has entailed for Matt and how he's done, and even got a little book review at the end of it.
Yeah, outstanding. Well, we're going to talk about books here in just 1 second because we're opening up the mailbag, but we'll play that brief update from Matt at the end of the podcast here after Bill and I get finished talking at you for a little.
And it is a short one this time for
I know.
We only talk for about 15 minutes, so you don't have to set aside your lunch hour or whatever to listen to the interview today.
I was giving you a hard time earlier. I'm not sure how. I didn't think you were capable of coming in under an hour, so that's impressive. 15 minutes.
Yeah. I put my lips in a hammer lock.
There you go. All right. Well, we'll get to that in just a moment. First, wanted to note a couple things. Had some really good reviews and some positive feedback from some of you through the email about the last podcast. Keep the comments, suggestions coming. We've got a new email address for that, radio@redlegnation.com. But I wanted to go ahead and open the mailbag before we start here. And had a question from Jeff in Florida. He lives about 50 minutes away from Ed Smith Stadium, so for a little bit longer. He's close to the Reds' spring training home. And he asks, what's the best book you've read and would recommend on our Reds? You want to take that or you want me to go first?
You can go ahead.
Well, I think there's several. Obviously, the one I would say first, and this is one of my favorites, obviously, Red Leg Journal. Greg Rhodes and John Arardi put that together, and it's a sort of a day-by-day with the Reds from...
Now, Red Leg Journal is Greg Rhodes and John Snyder.
That's what I meant. See, I've already made one mistake, and I'm not even going to stop and start over here. All my flaws out for the audience to see.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's a sort of a day by day with the Reds from the beginning, and it's somewhat filled with minutia. But for those of us that are obsessed with the Reds like we are, really fun to read back through that. Any thoughts?
I think it's a great book. I don't think you can go wrong with anything that Greg has written and been a part of. The book that he wrote, and I can't think of the name of it right now off the top of my head, about the 1869 Reds, is a fantastic book. And if you're a big Red Machine fan, Red Leg Dynasty is the book.
Absolutely. Yeah, do a search on Greg Rhodes. Obviously, we did a podcast interview with Greg, one of our earlier episodes. You can go to the RN Radio tab at redlegnation.com to find that one. Fascinating interview. And just if you search Amazon.com or wherever for Greg Rhodes, you can't go wrong with anything that he's written.
Absolutely. And Greg's a big supporter of Red Leg Nation. And I encourage everybody to go back and listen to that interview because it goes into the history of the Reds and the Reds Hall of Fame and his work with the Reds. And it's one of my favorites of all the ones we've done. And Chad and I did that interview with Greg together at the Reds Hall of Fame. And it was a fun afternoon.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. He was fascinating to listen to, and he could sit and talk about the history of this team for as long as you want to sit and talk with him. So,
absolutely.
Another one I want to mention, first of all, you've probably seen us on the blog. We've mentioned Joe Posnanski. He's a sports writer from Kansas City a few times, and he wrote a book a couple of years ago that I think is one of the best, well, probably, I'd say it's the best baseball book I've ever read, called The Soul of Baseball. It's about sort of a road trip with Buck O'Neill, the old Negro Leagues player, and just fascinating. Well, he's got a book coming out this September called The Machine, and it's about the Big Red Machine. I haven't read it yet, obviously, because it's coming out this fall, but I have no doubt this guy's a fantastic writer. That's going to be a great book. I'm really looking forward to reading that, and I've actually already pre-ordered it at Amazon.com. Probably shouldn't have done that. Maybe I could have gotten him to send me a review copy, but I wanted to mention that one. That's going to be great. All right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that one myself.
Let's move on to see what else we can talk about this week. One thing I wanted to mention, you wrote a post at Red Leg Nation that I thought was interesting, and you know, got some more information just today on this sort of the fight for that last spot in the Reds bullpen between Bill Bray and Danny Herrera and or Pedro Viola. You posted this week this quote from Dusty Baker that just, I don't know it. I don't want to say it in fury.
Blows your way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just, it's ridiculous. Makes you wonder what he's thinking. And I'll go ahead and read that quote. It's talking about, obviously, Danny Herrera, who you know, at that time had retired 16 of the 17 batters he'd faced in spring training. And you'll recall he got a lot of people out last year. He doesn't look like your prototypical pitcher in that he's, you know, what, 3'10" or something. He's short. But he just gets people out. And Dusty's quote was, guys like him are really effective in the spring, you know, as if he's just, you know, he just doesn't get people out. He's just, well, it's a spring, you know, batters are still getting adjusted. He's, you know, effective in the spring. I thought that was sort of demeaning to Herrera. What'd you think?
Well, I thought he threw him under the bus. I mean, he makes it sound like he doesn't have any history, you know, like he doesn't have a history. I mean, this guy's been successful everywhere he's pitched. I mean, he's not, you know, your 6'5", you know, 230-pound guy like, you know, some of these guys are. But he has six or seven pitches, apparently, from everything you read. And he gets people out. And for Baker to dismiss him like that, to me, is ridiculous. I can't imagine what he was thinking.
I can't either. And I don't know if you saw John Fay's blog this morning, but he had – talked with Dusty just this morning about that same issue. And first of all, he said that it sounds like Bill Bray's roster spot is in jeopardy because his velocity is down 5 or 6 miles an hour, which is that's a concern, especially with how many injuries Bray has gone through. And Dusty said, you know, quote, that's the question right now. He did a good job for us last year. He's got outstanding stuff. Yesterday, his velocity was down. You don't know if that's from overthrowing. He's been checked and they can't find anything. And then Fay asked him about Herrera, you know, and whether Herrera would get the call if it's not Bray. And Dusty didn't really say one way or the other, but he did say this. Early in the year, change of speed guys are the hardest to hit, Baker said. And again, that sort of felt like a little bit dismissive of Herrera. So similar to what we heard earlier in the week.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's almost like there's dusty guys and then there's other guys, you know, and it doesn't sound like Herrera's a dusty guy.
Well,
I hope that's not the case, but that's the way it comes across to me.
Yeah, you know, dusty guys should be the guys that get people out, period. I've never been a huge Herrera fan for any reason. I mean, he's gotten people out, so I like him as a prospect for the Reds, but, you know, I never had any feelings one way or the other on I thought that Bray should get the first shot because of what he's done in the past, but I'm starting to hop on that Herrera bandwagon now just because I feel like he's sort of being dismissed. Maybe he's not in the plans. I don't know.
If he keeps, and you remember his Red Leg Nation connection.
That is?
He was a high school teammate of Logan Parker.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I had forgotten that. Spotlight player Logan Parker. We'll talk about him a little bit here later in the podcast as well, but no, I'd forgotten about that. So, I don't know. Bray's probably hurt again, sounds like. Who knows? And maybe Herrera will make the roster. We'll see how Dusty uses him or if Dusty does bring him along.
But we'll see. The other thing is, you know, we're starting to hear a number of guys that we can talk about and that we can't that are starting to go through loss of velocity in the spring. And you wonder whether they're hitting that dead arms part of spring training. Which, from everything I've ever read, just seems like it's a normal part of spring training. And I've never heard any explanation for it, but I've heard more than one pitcher claim that they go through a part of spring training where their arm goes dead, they lose velocity, and then it comes back. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? We'll see. They are getting towards the end of spring training, and it's sort of a drag at this time. And you do hear about these dead arms becoming an issue at this time. We'll see. We're, you know, less than or just about a week away from opening day, which I can't wait for that. I've taken the day off work that day. I haven't decided whether or not I'm actually going to try to go to Cincinnati, but I've already got someone in to come in and substitute for me, so I'm ready. I'm going to take that day off and watch the game at least.
Okay.
Well, anyway, what next? What do you want to talk about next?
Well, I think it's worth talking about the last spot on the bench, the left-handed spot on the bench. I think John Fay's kind of opened up some discussion in his blog and in his articles. You know, we had talked about, I think we talked about last week, that we thought it'd be Nix. But since then, he's really cooled off, and Fay reports that the Reds may be looking at the free agent list for some left-handed hitters. And he reported this week that Valentin was at Ed Smith Stadium after he was cut by the Nationals. So, you know, the Reds like him.
Definitely.
And there were some other left-handed hitters. Gonzalez is still out there. You know, I don't know who else. And then you have to assume there'll be some cuts here probably, you know, this week. But it sounds like they're looking for a left-handed bat for the bench.
Well, I went on record in the last podcast as saying that I thought Darryl Ward was going to get that spot, and so it promptly put the kiss of death on him. He was released shortly thereafter. And, you know, I kind of agreed with you that Lance Nix looked like the next guy that would claim that last spot, but now you're starting to wonder. Clearly, when you're talking about Javier Valentin, the Latin love machine, as they call him, you know, he's got a history with this team where clearly he's been that third catcher for a while that we've complained about, but he's been there.
And it gives him another opportunity to carry three catchers.
It does. Although he caught very little last year, he's sort of the left-handed bat off the bench. I wouldn't be surprised to see him.
Yeah, just based on history and what we've read from John Fay in the last couple of days, it sounds to me like odds on favorite.
And he was just cut from the Nationals, right?
Yeah.
So, and Luis
Gonzalez, they did a lot of Reds movement this week.
Yeah, imagine that. They cut the head off there earlier in the spring though, with getting rid of Bowden when he resigned under
press. Yeah, and then Willie Moe got put on waivers yesterday, and then they moved Young onto their 40 man.
Well, did you hear the story behind moving Young onto the 40-man?
No.
Big controversy in Washington because Dmitri Young had been taken off the 40-man so they could protect someone, I think, in the Rule 5 draft, maybe it was. And Jim Bowden had sort of given him a handshake agreement that before opening day, they'd put him back on the 40-man. But never in writing. Bowden never told anybody about it. And Dmitri Young, I guess, started complaining, saying, "Hey, wait a minute, you know, Bowden's gone, but he told me he was going to put me back on there." And so they put him back on just because of this handshake deal. So even sort of beyond the grave, so to speak, Bowden's coming back to haunt the Nationals.
You know, the speaking of the 40 man and bringing this back to the Reds, it seems like at minimum we're going to have to pick up two guys that are going to have to be added to the 40 man. It sounds like Gomes has got the team made,
right?
And whoever this left-handed bat ends up being is also going to be have to add to the 40-man. And if you look at the Reds' 40-man roster, as not like the past few years, there's no easy decision there on who you're going to take off the 40-man to add these two guys. And I don't see anybody going from the 15, you know, going on to the 60-day DL,
right?
Which may, you know, which gives you an out for that 40 man. But I have, you look at that 40 man roster, and I don't know who they'll take off the 40 man.
Yeah, I'm just looking down the list right now.
I don't see any obvious candidates.
I don't either. Sam Lac.
I think if it was me, I mean, I'd be looking at Castillo, but you know, they talk Castillo up a lot. And you wonder whether Ricker, I don't know how you pronounce that guy, the guy's name, you know, but they you know, Richar, the second baseman that they came over in a deal last year. You know, he's put up good numbers. I think Tatum's a possibility, but he's hit, and they're it's not like they're real deep at catcher.
Yeah, I don't see anybody. We've only got four outfielders on the 40-man period. So none of those guys are going, obviously. Bruce Dickerson, Hopper, or Tavares.
Hopper's a possibility, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Although with a lack of depth in outfield, gosh, I can't believe we don't have more outfielders on the 40-man than that, just looking at it right now.
Yeah, you got some coming up, though. You know, Dorn hasn't had to go on to the 40-man yet. Stubbs hasn't had to go on to the 40-man yet. Todd Frazier has been playing some outfield a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think Logan even got one start in the outfield. So
probably if I were going to, you know, I'd have Wilkin Castillo up near the top of my list. Probably I would guess Richard, or however you pronounce his name, Danny Richard. I'd have him at the top of the list.
And between you and me, even though we're not deep in the outfield, I think Hopper, with the injury history, the lack of power, he's really only had one productive season in the majors. He would have to be somebody else you'd have to try to sneak through.
Right. And, you know, talking about the lack of outfielders on the 40-man, we'll be putting two guys on the 40-man probably that are outfielders. So Hopper's got to be probably, you know, he's 30 years old. Turned 30 years old this week, actually.
Yeah. You also have to wonder if, you know, there's no way Jock Jones makes this team. Do they release him? Do they move him to try to move him to Louisville?
Well, he had an agreement that if he didn't make the roster that they would release him. So he could try to hook on somewhere else. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them ask him to go to Louisville and him agree, because his career's in shambles. He might think he can catch on with someone else.
But if he goes to Louisville,
it's going to irritate
me. Does he start?
Yeah, and who does he start over? Some guys that have a chance to help the team.
Exactly. You know, does he play in front of a Danny Dorn or this Darnell McDonald or you know, who knows? Or, you know, or Danny, you know, or I don't know. Anderson,
right?
You know, Cumberland. I have no idea, but I would hate for them to take him to Louisville and him play in front of a young guy.
I don't mind him using a AAA a lot of times as sort of a, you know, to store someone in case there are injuries or a need on the major league roster throughout the year. But Jones isn't that guy I want coming up. You know, I'd rather have it be Cumberland even, you know, one of these younger guys that need to get at bats. We've got, you know, sort of going to have a clog at AA and AAA if they have people like Jones in the outfield.
It could back up the whole system, and to me that makes no sense.
No, you got to look at the guys that are going to have a chance of being part of the next, you know, good Reds team, and making sure they get their at bats. And you don't want a guy like Jock Jones taking at bats away from him. I still am. It's got to be, you know, we talk about Dusty guys. That's got to be the only reason he's still here. I can't believe he's still with the team.
Yeah, maybe he needs the meal money. That's, you know, I don't.
maybe Dusty's helping him out.
Matt did tell me something yesterday, though, that I had never thought of this, but he said they pay the major leaguers on Tuesday. So he thinks there'll be cuts before Tuesday so they don't have to pay guys.
That's an interesting one. That's
I never thought of it that way, but wouldn't surprise me a bit.
No, me either. That's exactly why this Spotlight player program is so valuable to us. You know, that's something I wouldn't have known otherwise.
Right.
So getting it from a guy in Sarasota. What else have we heard from Sarasota? Anything else relating to maybe Logan Parker that you want to talk about?
Just that Matt told me yesterday that Logan is just absolutely killing the ball at AA. Logan is still with the AA team. Yonder Alonso has been moved down to the High A team, so looks like he's going to start the year in Sarasota, and Logan's going to start the year in Carolina.
How big a surprise is that?
I think that it is a smart move. Because I think they want, with Alonso, I think you'd want him to have success early in his career. And if they think that he might struggle a little bit in Double A, it makes more sense to me let him go down to Sarasota, tear it up, and then you've got him up there. You know, you can have him in Carolina by the middle of the season. And the other side of the coin is Logan Parker was killing the ball at the end of last season. And you're rewarding him for what he did last year, and apparently he's carried it right through into spring training this year. And as I've said before, I really expect big things out of Logan this year. I think he feels like he has something to prove to the organization in a good, you know, and I mean that in a good way.
Right.
But I think that he's using the drafting of Yonder Alonso as a motivating factor.
Yeah, we've used the term that he's got a chip on his shoulder, not in a bad way, but just in the sense that, you know what, I'm going to show them. He worked hard on the off season. He's killing the ball now. I'm glad he looks like he's going to get a chance in Double A to start the season. It's a big surprise to me. I thought Alonzo would start there no matter what, but I do agree with you that it's a smart move. Why rush him along? Double A will be there. Let him go down and start in High A if he hits the ball like everybody expects him to. You know, you can make those decisions later on down the line.
And, yeah, he could be in Carolina by Memorial Day.
Right. And what you're doing by sending him down there as well is you're saying to Logan Parker, you're going to get some at-bats now. You've earned at least a shot at getting some at-bats in Double A to start the year, and I fully expect Logan to take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah, that Carolina team could be loaded. I mean, there could be – depending on how Louisville shakes out. Now, you don't know what they're going to do with Valleca. You don't know what they're going to do with Dorn. And a lot of that has to do with whether Yanish makes the team or Kepinger. You know, it's all going to flow downhill. But that Carolina team could be fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt. I hope we get a chance to get down there and see them. I'm actually going to see them, I think it's June 18th, maybe 19th, something like that, when they come to play the Tennessee Smokies in Sevierville, Tennessee. We're going to be down there that weekend and going to get a chance to see Carolina at that time. That'd be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, the other guy that's really hitting the ball well, apparently, is the there's only one 07 draft pick that's still on the AAA roster. And that's Todd Frazier.
Yeah.
He's still on the AAA roster at this point. So he must be ripping the ball.
Yeah, he's exceeding my expectations. I'm not really a draft guru, but he's moving, progressing at a very nice clip. You got to think by the end of 2009, he might be a guy they look at bringing up.
He might get a September call up if he makes it to Louisville at some point during this year, and with injuries and progress, you don't know.
Right.
Heck, I wouldn't even want to predict where Todd's going to end up playing.
No,
much less what team.
But if he keeps hitting the ball, I think you're going to have a lot of decisions in the offseason to make. The Reds are with respect to third base. If you want to put Frazier at third base, or there's going to be a lot of decisions to make in the next little bit. Good decisions. I think having an abundance of talent is not a bad thing.
Nope. You never complain about having too many good players.
No, definitely not, and that's something we haven't really had to worry about in a long time. But I think some of these, some of the cream of the crop in the minors are getting ready to be where they're in this position to hit Cincinnati, and be a lot of fun decisions that the Reds are gonna have to make. I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions, but we'll leave that to Walt Jocketty, I guess.
Yeah, it's gonna make the Reds fun to watch in the next couple of years. I mean, I think you and I have talked about it before. If you can't get excited about watching a Joey Votto or a Jay Bruce or a Johnny Cueto or an Edison Volquez, learn this game and grow as players, then you're still in the 60s wishing Bob Gibson was still out there or something.
That's right. Yeah, I think, even if you're as down on this team as we've been at times, although I've gotten awfully optimistic here lately, but even if you're down on this team, I don't think they have a chance of winning much at all this year. Golly, there's still so many storylines to watch that are going to make this a real fun team. And you just named some of the guys that are just going to be really fun to watch. So it's going to be even if we don't win a lot, it's going to be a fun year, I think, in a lot of ways. So because, we've talked about it before. They got an opportunity the next two or three years to really turn the corner. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, there's a window opening for the Reds. The Cubs are going to always be tough to deal with because they've got so much money to spend.
Right.
But there's an opportunity to challenge for divisions and wild cards in the next 2 to 3 years, I think. And then you wonder how long the window stays open. But I think there is a window in the next 2 to 3 years.
Definitely. So we've waited a long time for it. Let's hope it comes to pass.
Absolutely.
Well, we had a couple other items. Maybe we can catch up on those next podcast. But let's go ahead and sort of lead into your talk with Matt Klinker. Want to mention before we sign off with you, Bill, that you are supposed to be talking, I believe, to have another pretty good guest for next week. You can mention him if you want. If not, we'll leave it as a surprise for next week.
That's okay. I'm supposed to have a talk with a Reds beat writer for the Cincinnati Enquirer, John Fay, this week. I've known John for about 25 years. We used to live in the same two-family house many years ago. So that should be a fun interview. I'm going to see what we can get John to tell us.
Yeah, that'd be good. And we'll go ahead and look forward to that. And at this time, anything you want to say sort of to lead into the talk you had to sort of, I call it, I guess, the Sarasota update with Matt Klinker? Anything you want to add to intro that?
No, just when I talked to Matt on the phone, he must have had a long day that day because he sounded tired. But he was Matt. He was very open, very honest, and very friendly, and happy to be involved with our podcasts. And he's just such a great guy. We're lucky in that the kids that we're dealing with are such great kids, and they're smart, and they want to succeed, and they're the kind of people that you really want to do well.
Absolutely, and you know, Klinker in particular, but they're all working hard down there and doing pretty well this spring. So we got our fingers crossed. All right, well, Bill, thanks again. We're going to go ahead and listen to Bill's talk with Matt Klinker. I'll be back after the end of that with some closing thoughts. But here's Bill and Matt.
We're pleased to be on the phone today from Sarasota with one of our spotlight players, the ever-popular Matt Klinker. Thanks for giving us some of your time today, Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How's everybody out there in Red Lake Nation?
I hope they're doing well today. Let's start out today. We're going to do a quick one today. So start out by telling us what spring training is like for you. You know, what's your routine and how it changes as spring training moves along?
All right. Well, as soon as we get here, pitchers and catchers, pitchers will throw about every other day on the mound. We'll do, you know, you do one day just on the side doing a bullpen, take a day off, and then the next day will be like a live batting practice session or a simulated game, just throwing to some of the catchers who will stand in as hitters. And then once the position players show up, then we'll start building up in games, you know, one inning, two innings, three innings, four innings, et cetera. So it's about every other day. And then, like, the last week of camp, you know, about right now is when we're spreading it out to our normal five-day routine for starters and any given day for relievers.
All righty. You're assigned to a team when spring training starts, right?
Uh-huh.
And you started with which level this year?
I started with Louisville. I was on the Louisville roster for about the first 2 weeks of camp. Myself, Scott Carroll, and Todd Frazier were the 07 guys on the Louisville roster to start. And then, you know, obviously after the big team makes their first cut, then everything kind of trickles down. And I've been on the Carolina roster since.
Were you surprised to start at the AAA level a little bit?
I mean, I had a thought that I might start at AAA. You know, doing some quick numbers in my head with what guys were at the big league camp and what guys were in minor league camp and healthy. I had a somewhat idea. I thought it would be about a 50-50 where I would start.
How much did the WBC affect the team assignments, do you think?
I would say, I mean, a lot, considering we had two of our starters, you know, two of our major league starters with the Dominican. So then, you know, that's two more starters from the minor league that probably were invited to camp. So how everything trickles down at the end of camp, you know, it kind of trickled up. Yeah. For the WBC.
Do you think the WBC, those guys that took part in that, even on, you know, even the guys on the minor league level, you know, Sullivan and guys like that, does that put them behind the rest of you guys that were already in camp or in front or what? Or do you think it just depends on the individual?
I think it definitely depends on the individual and the country. I mean, I know there's been some major league teams, you know, not satisfied with the amount of innings some of their pitchers threw. But, I mean, I think that's part of it, and that's maybe the sacrifice you make for playing for your country. And, you know, maybe you just get that work in on the side, or, you know, those should be the best baseball players for that country. They should be able to catch up pretty quickly. But that's just my opinion.
So how have you thrown this spring? You been happy with how you've thrown?
Yeah, I mean, the first outing was good. I was mainly just pumping fastballs and changeups. I gave up two runs on two hits and a walk. So far, that's been my only walk. I walked the first guy face this spring, and that's been the only walk I've surrendered. So, you know, that was my whole key or my whole approach to spring training was really just throw strikes. And the second outing, I really had all three pitches, so I had, you know, a lot of strikeouts. And then my final outing, which was 2 days ago at Boston, I really was just, my curveball wasn't really consistent, so I was just stuck with my fastball and changeup. Got a lot of pop-ups and ground balls. So I've done pretty well, 2 earned runs, 9 innings. Can't be mad about that. So I think I'll probably have one more 4 or 5 inning outing and then hit it running.
Now, when you said you did, like the other day, you said you didn't have your curveball, you didn't have your good curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still use it then as a tease pitch or something like that, or do you go completely away from it when you don't have it?
No, like I still throw it in like 0-2, 1-2 situations. But you know, if it's I call it an action ball count or like a need to get a decision pitch, like 2-2, 3-1, you know, then definitely. Mm-hmm. Stick to a pitch I know I'm going to get over the plate.
Okay. How does your spring success or how you're not maybe not necessarily statistical success, but how you're throwing, how does it compare to last spring?
I mean, really the same. I think I've thrown about the same. The results have definitely been different. Last spring I did really well my first two outings and then got touched around a little bit my second two outings. But in both last year and this year, and maybe just the way I pitch in general, or at least I hope so, is, you know, just throw it over the plate, let the guys get themselves out, 8 guys, you know, 7 guys behind you and your catcher. You know, let the hitter make mistakes and hit a bad pitch. But, yeah, the results have been differently, hopefully because I'm just mixing it up a little bit more with different off-speed pitches. But throwing strikes, that's the name of the game.
So you think like the year's experience maybe is shown the difference? Is what it sounds like you're saying.
I mean, maybe, but I think
smarter.
definitely being able to throw a changeup on any count, I think is led to my success last year as well as this year so far.
So, based on what you've done this spring, is there anything in your off-season regimen that you'd change?
I don't think so. I feel really healthy. My body feels strong. Arm feels great. I don't know. I mean, not yet. Not yet. I mean, long season, but
yeah.
Everything I guess is good thus far.
Okay, so at this point, you haven't been told where you're going to be assigned yet?
No. Okay. We still. When we left, they posted new rosters for tomorrow. I think we got. We still have 15 pitchers on the AAA, 14 on the double, and then obviously some guys still in Major League camp that got to come down. So there's still going to be some trickle down, so we'll see. Whether it's Carolina or, you know, a start in Sarasota, just got to get the ball every fifth day and do what I can.
So the way this is announced is it just goes up on a sheet somewhere, and that's where you know, there's nothing formal if you get moved down a level?
No, not really. Just look at the sheet every day. Even Alonzo, you know, I think when he got pushed down to the Sarasota level, I just come in and it's on the sheet, you know, whether it's first rounder or free agent, you know, pretty much everybody's on the same level and nobody gets preferential treatment. It's here it is, boys, let's go get them.
You had told me that you had hoped to pitch in one of the Futures games. Has there been any talk of the Futures games at all?
Yeah, there's been talk. I think Jordan Smith, who pitched in Sarasota and Chattanooga last year, will be starting the game in Dayton. I'm not sure if that's official yet or not, but I think that's kind of the rumor going around. I don't think I will be participating in either game. Not sure if that's, you know, they don't consider me a prospect or it didn't work out with, you know, my days scheduled as a starter. But you know, for whatever reason, wasn't tabbed this year, so maybe next year.
So is this, I mean, are you disappointed, or is it just one of those, if everything goes right, things, it would have been nice for it to happen for you?
No, I mean, it definitely would have been great. But, yeah, I mean, the season and you know, being able to be on the right day, throwing once the season opens is, I think, personally, a lot more important than, you know, making a one-inning stint, you know. But it should definitely still be a great game, and definitely something the fans will definitely enjoy.
Yeah. I hadn't realized until I was looking around today that there's going to be two futures games.
Yeah, there's going to be one in Zebulon as well.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize that. I was poking around on their website today and saw that. Matt, tell us about where your confidence level is about getting to the big leagues compared to where it might have been last year or before spring training.
I mean, I think to make it to the big leagues, you got to always have it in your mind that that's definitely capable for you. So, I mean, whether it's with the Reds or somewhere else, you know, I think before I you know, I call it quits in baseball, I'm going to make it to the majors, whether it's as a starter with the Reds, as a reliever, a closer, you know, in some capacity. I you know, I'm 100% sure I'll make it there someday, some way, somehow. And, you know, as far as, like, a day-to-day approach, how that affects it, you know, I'm not sure, but, you know, I think confidence-wise, you got to – I mean, why else play if you don't think you're going to make it?
There you go. Okay, Matt, now this is just you and I talking. You know, there's nobody listening here. So, Who or have you been impressed with down there, or who surprised you how they looked, or is there been anybody that you've heard about that maybe you haven't seen that's been impressive to the team? You know, any, can you give us any scoop?
I don't know if there's been any dark horses. I mean, obviously Frazier's looked really, really good. Drew Stubbs has been on base almost every time I turn around and look at the Triple A game. It seems like he's you know, scoring another run for him. Philippe Baliquette's been throwing really well. Trying to think here on the fly.
I heard a rumor that Frazier was getting some time in the outfield.
I think he actually played left field today in the Double A game.
What about Logan? Has he been playing any in the outfield?
Logan he's gotten one start in the outfield. He's been DHing, hitting the cover off the ball. You know, not a lot of home runs, but, you know, his thing, you know, just hitting singles and doubles and, you know, causing havoc.
And which roster
causing
is Logan?
Havoc for the pitcher.
Which roster is Logan on right now?
He's with Double A.
Great.
Zach Cozart's still with Double A. Frazier. Definitely not 25 guys at the Louisville and Carolina levels yet. So there's going to be some cuts, but that's expected.
Okay, last question now. Now I got to preference this and for everybody, you know. Now Matt's a very intelligent man, but despite his fine upbringing education, I found that he was grossly deficient in literature a while back because he'd never read Jim Boughton's Ball 4, which is the greatest baseball book ever written. So I lent him my copy, and so Matt, give us a baseball player's view of Ball 4.
It's a great book. Unbelievable. Anytime I talk to, like, one of the older instructors, you know, I always ask them, you know, if they faced Jim, you know, how good his knuckleball was. But it's just crazy how much he was ostracized for the book, where looking back on it now, you know, how many, you know, truth tellers we've had from Canseco to, you know, Joe Torre's new book, where they're probably telling a lot more secretive kind of things compared to just, you know, the clubhouse atmosphere that Bowden did. But it's an awesome book, and definitely from my perspective, it hit home on so many levels. You know, his relationship with his pitching coach and his manager, it's just like the game hasn't changed at all.
You told me a story about you were going to talk to Griffey Sr. about a story that was in ball in the ball five section of the book. Have you got a chance to ask Griffey Sr. about whether he actually did fall down when he batted against Bowden in his when he had his comeback with the Braves?
Yeah, I did. In the book, Bowden says that he struck Griffey out on a knuckleball. It was a windy day, so the thing was just dancing, and Griffey swung so hard at it, he fell down. And talked to Griff about it the other day, and he said he was playing for Sparky Anderson, and he said something about if the pitcher throws it slow, you got to swing slow. And you know, Griff was like, "Well, that's a bunch of horse manure." So he thought he was just going to knock it out of the ballpark, and wound up on his behind. But yeah, definitely a true statement, confirmed by the batter.
There you go. Matt, as always, we really appreciate your involvement with Red Leg Nation and all the time you give us. Good luck this spring and this season, and we'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Definitely appreciate the support, and go Reds.
Okay, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Red Leg Nation Radio Podcast. Thanks for joining us. As always, send any comments or concerns or suggestions to... Actually, we've got a new email address now. It's radio@redlegnation.com. We enjoy getting your feedback. If you have any questions that you want to be answered on the phone, or just any comments about the state of the Reds that you'd like to be read on the podcast, feel free to send those to us. radio@redlegnation.com. If you haven't already, go subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. That's the best way that you can ensure that you don't miss a single episode of Red Leg Nation Radio. Do a search for Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes. Or you can click the little tab that we have there at redlegnation.com. It's the RN Radio tab up at the top. It's got all the updates, information, and links to subscribe via iTunes or via RSS. Thanks again to all of you out there in the nation. This is Chad Dotson saying so long.